Hello and welcome to the Notorious Scoundrels. I am Evan. That's Mike. We have a special guest, Will Schick.
Hello again. So fun to be back.
Yeah, I appreciate you being back. Very brave of you to be here on your own
with no backup. I thought that it was going to be both myself and the other Will Pagani, but he's on a plane. So what do you do? So he left me to talk about points adjustments with like all the cast today on my own. So we'll see, you know, I'll just say whatever I want and he'll have to deal with it.
All right. Well, that's the best of both worlds. You get your freedom and we get like the hot scoops. Appreciate you being here. Obviously, something significant and surprising happened just a little over, just a little over a week ago at this point. And Mike, I'm gonna give you the floor for the first question to ask of Mr. Schick over here.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, what's up with this upgrade that lets Imperial Core like just move at speed 3?
Random jackass was talking on a podcast and we were like, why not try that? I think Evan said it on the last cast or the cast about the points update that you guys did. It's like whenever a dev says something, they're not just throwing it out there. They've thought about it or they've discussed it to some extent. That doesn't mean that it's real. But obviously when that example got brought up, it was kind of timely because we were literally in the middle of discussing Riot Troopers and what potential fixes we could employ and deficient in the game.
Oh, look at that.
Right.
The system works.
The conversion has happened.
We did it. I love it. So, you know, like, and so when that question got asked in my brain, I was like, well, this is kind of timely because we're going through all of the different steps. Do you lower points? Do you look at changing the card itself? I know Pagani brought up the idea of changing hold the line as a universal keyword and just making it do something different.
Yeah.
Or do you like look at upgrades? And so at the time we weren't really convinced on what we were going to do, just that we were talking about that. And of course, one of the places where, you know, Riot Troopers seemed to fall down was their ability to close before they all got shot up. And once they get in, they do their job. So the question became, okay, well, is that a thing that we could do? And should it apply to Riot Troopers only? Should it be something else? And that idea morphed into the Imperial March, which effectively went on all the core units for Empire, because they effectively all had kind of the same overall, you know, need for it or a desire to maybe be able to utilize a card like that for their various roles. And that became a really nice way to kind of work more towards the Empire's overall faction identity. As we went through testing and things like that, it also did some interesting things to the Battle Force because you can obviously take it, as I believe the rules mods confirmed. I don't think I'm spoiling anything in Remnant. It was one of those things where we had brought the idea up. We had discussed it a little bit. At the time, it was very much like burst of speed. You just exhaust it and you get to go an extra, you know, you get to go speed 3 for a round. That was the initial one that was in testing. It was like way too good. So then we kind of changed it and messed around with it. And then it got opened up to more things and all of that. And so, yeah, again, very rarely does an idea germinate from nowhere as an example, because we talk about this stuff so much for so many hours a week that there's not too many new ideas that can pop up on a podcast. Sometimes they do, but like the hold the line, changing the hold the lines ruling was definitely one that I was like, really? Are we thinking about this? he was clearly, but it hadn't come up in the group.
Sure. Just goes to show that even you, Will, we have to take seriously sometimes.
Sometimes, you know, like, I mean, the thing with the development philosophy in general, right, is like there's no real sacred cows. We will throw every idea on the board, no matter how crazy, just to get it up there. Because a lot of the times the ideas that never make it or you immediately go, that's a terrible idea. Talking about why it doesn't work leads you to a solution that does work. And so it's really important, we find in those situations, to never hold anything back. Like, you know, should you take this character's points and make it 0? What happens if you make it 0? That's a Pagani's favorite, right? when we're looking at points adjustments or units that are underperforming, and the statement just becomes, okay, make the points zero, now what? And then it's like, oh, well, now it's really good because it's free, so it does stuff, it's just where's the right level and all of that, you know. Or you get to things where we've talked about this before when looking at the at revising and revamping the rules. You know, we talked about eliminating the dice pool mechanic and instead having a fixed pool based on the number of miniatures in the unit, right? So you get degradation that's controllable, and you can say, okay, well, when there's two or one, you know, trooper left, they're still rolling enough dice to be able to utilize their weapons effectively and still be impactful in the game. We abandoned that and instead changed cover, because what we realized going through that whole process was that cover was actually the problem to dice pools. It wasn't the dice pools themselves necessarily. So
good decision, I think.
It's a lot of that kind of discussion, and it's a bit like a little bit of a whirlpool where you just kind of go down the funnel until you figure out what you're doing. So you never know. Gungans are maybe possible someday, as I keep saying. That's why I can never discount them.
I wasn't even going to say
never
it.
Know, you know?
I wasn't going to say, because we're a Serious Legion podcast.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Wilshik, if you make Gungans, I will basically pay you guys enough money to do it on my own.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, I know where to send the PO checks then when we get there.
The Riot Control Squad is proof that you know, Mike will buy anything as long as it's attractive enough. Okay,
there
so I did want to do a follow-up. So Imperial March was one of 12 upgrades that were in the set. 12 is an interesting number, right? Because it's definitely less than what I would typically expect out of, you know, say, for instance, a upgrade pack that is sold on an annual basis, which is something that we, like, have already been told that we're expecting. You know, in January, or, you know, Q1 of 2026, I think is when it was. And so, given that, assuming that these upgrades were not, in fact, a secret part of the generic upgrade pack that is going to come out in, you know, a month and a half or whatever, I'm assuming that this is actually sort of a preview of that 2026 upgrade pack. And if so, I'm curious about, like, what was the process of deciding the timeline of these releases? And I think I'll just end it there to just see what you think.
Sure. So no, these aren't in the upcoming, upgrade card pack. As we've stated many times, include all the ones that have existed previously.
They're now in the
new format.
One. Yeah.
So that one is still just everything that was in the original PDFs.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are from the upcoming one, so upgrade pack number two. And effectively, we had been working on those, you know, to some extent, right after we had sent everything else to print. So you're talking like December-ish of last year. We were really heavy into the development and the playtesting of all this stuff and looking at different options and adding and subtracting things as we went along, because we knew where that stuff was going to come. And that just happened to coincide with the points development and adjustments that we were looking at, which were in their infancy, right? As we talked about in April, a lot of the data that we get from Adepticon really gets focused into the testing and points adjustments that come in November. And that's why we have kind of this two cycles that you can kind of depend on, where we're pretty happy doing April and November, because we can look at how things are adjusted in November. We can look at how things are adjusted in April. And it gives us a bit of a 12-month cycle where we have time to analyze, test, and then release. So what you're really looking at in those updates, and I think this is important to remember, is it's not what has happened within 6 months since the update. It's what's happened in the 12 months since the last update, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the reality of the timeline that it takes to be able to do these things effectively. This time around, as we were working on that stuff, we kind of realized that, oh, there are some things in here that were meant to address specific deficiencies in the game, right? We finally were at a point, and I've talked about this a little bit, where one of the most exciting things with where we are now within the product development lifecycle and everything else, with the revamp being done and all the stuff coming out and kind of a firm foundation for this new edition with the new starters and all of that, but especially from the existing player standpoint, right? You guys have had all of the materials since April.
Yeah.
So we are now at a point to where we can start to really push on ideas that we've had for a while. We can start to inject new things into the game. We can start to realize some of the ideas or concepts that we had originally. And with that, right, as we were looking at that stuff, the more we analyzed what a points adjustment would do, we said, well, the points adjustment does some things, but what we really want to do is we want to target these very specific things. And in this update, a lot of it was operatives. It was it was specifically like looking at the operative slot and saying, this is not a very compelling slot, but it's filled with compelling characters. What do we do about that? Like, what are some of the problems that operatives run into that makes them less desirable? It's not just points, although we identified being aggressive on points cuts for several of them would probably help out. It's also like order control. It's also how they interact. It's also the command tax that you have to pay to get the good command cards, those kinds of things, things we've talked about a lot before. And that became kind of the guiding light, along with looking at some of the things and saying, okay, prepared positions is not as strong as we thought. Let's look at how do we improve that? Well, you can improve points, but that doesn't necessarily solve some of the core fundamental problems. And we know that we have the opportunity to maybe inject a couple of upgrades that can make these things more exciting or more interesting or provide players more choices when they're looking at that, in addition to points decreases. So in the end, they kind of became enmeshed with each other, to where we said, you know, we can't really do one without the other. And it was exciting to us to be able to inject a lot of new ideas and new options into the game without being tied to a product cycle that says, well, you have to wait for things to come to print. And as I think we've seen again and again throughout the different game lines, when we've done print and play like previews of things that will come out as product later, for the most part, the vast majority of the community is very excited to just have the new things as fast as we can provide them.
Right.
And then when those things come out in official form, a lot of us love to have the official cards. So at that moment, we upgrade our print and play, you know, card cutout sleeved things with the real cards. And it's a second moment to be happy. And so that's really where we wound up, was the points adjustments, of which this is only a portion of the points adjustments that we're working on. There will be points adjustments in November as well, targeting some other stuff. But as the article mentioned, we felt pretty confident where we were on that stuff. We were seeing really good results. The playtest groups that we had were very positive on the overall impact. And we really wanted to drop some of those things now rather than wait in November, both for the player community and just the excitement level, but also because June is kind of the start of the new tournament season. And so having the board set to a place where we felt a lot more comfortable with the balance overall was pretty important to us as well. So, you know, it all worked out, and we do have 2 points in a year where we go on stream and we talk about where we think the game is, but that doesn't mean that we can't, you know, rewrite the game at any time, I guess, if we really want to be that crazy. And so we took the opportunity and dropped the points adjustment, and then we also provided the 12 new upgrades.
Yeah, yeah. So that makes sense. I think to summarize is that these upgrades served a function that you felt was generally missing in the game. And along with the points adjustments that came with them, is that you felt confident from a playtest standpoint in the balance levels of the upgrades, like vis-a-vis what the text actually is, you know, that the text is good enough that you feel good enough releasing them. And so I guess like the question, the follow-up that would lead to would be, for the rest of them that are going to be in that upgrade pack 2, I think that like the baseline expectation would be that we would find out about those when the pack releases, or, you know, potentially some of them maybe get previewed a little bit before, who knows, but
you never know, right? Like we can do whatever we want.
You can do whatever you want.
Apparently, right?
Apparently.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it just kind of comes down to what is healthiest for the game and what is going to give players, you know, the ability to interact with the game in the way that we want, which is we want every choice, every unit, every character that's released for the game to be a viable option. It doesn't have to be the best. It doesn't have to go win a grand tournament or a world's event, but it should be a reasonable thing where you're like, I like this unit. I like this character. I can build a functional list around it and not feel like I'm off the curve. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, if we get to a point to where we're looking at stuff and we say, well, if we had just adjusted points on most of the prepared position units, And we did what we did, but we didn't release any of the upgrades that went along with that, right? Dug in being the specific one that's targeted to them. Would people be as excited or viewing those units as viable, or would they just be like, well, they're kind of cheaper, but they're still not great, you know? And I think
I can tell you what
that's,
we would have said, which is
yeah,
so I mean, again, like points don't fix everything, right? Like they're just points adjustments are fun. But the reality is that points are not going to fix something that's underperforming. Again, this goes back to Pagani's argument of, well, what if it just costs 0 points? And there are times where you say, okay, well, it's free, but like the only reason I'm taking it is because it's free and it's an activation. It still doesn't do anything. And I think, when we looked at prepared positions, when we looked at a couple of the other things like the operatives and stuff, we said they need more there in order to be able to fulfill the role and the function that Legion wants them to do and to make them exciting choices to players. And the nice thing about the upgrades is that if you don't believe that the unit needs the extra juice, you just don't take them and you get the discount, right? Like, and I think that's another really interesting thing when it comes to players' abilities to be able to build their list and customize things. It's no different than do I take the naked units for activations or do I kit them out completely and do all this stuff? So I mean, in the future, is there a world in which we preview more of those upgrades? Absolutely. I don't think that it really hurts the upgrade product at all. The point of that whole thing is not necessarily to make some like a card pack that players have to buy. It's to inject life and viability and excitement into the game. So, however that works, it doesn't really, it's kind of meaningless because again, what matters is the miniatures. What matters is the game that's played on the table. We're not a card company. We're not trying to sell you cards. So, the cards are just an important part of the overall experience. There's a lot of different ways to disseminate those, I think. And it's been fun to see the community reaction to it and kind of be proven that, this is a great direction forward and something we, have dialed in on exploring more.
Mike, you want to take the next one?
Yeah, I think a lot of these upgrades were really creative and frankly, like really inspiring from just like a design perspective. And I think one of the things that really stood out to me was like a card like Lead the Strike Team. I was like, first of all, awesome card, love it. The design is just like nailed it. Secondly, it really kind of got my brain going as far as like we've got customizable characters coming soon. Like, how do you guys envision these new upgrades? Like, were these new upgrades built with those customizables in mind? Obviously, like you're building things with everything in mind, but like, I guess specifically, are they tailored for those characters? Can we expect more upgrades like Lead the Strike Team, et cetera?
Yeah, so well, first part of the question, were some of those upgrades designed with the customizables in mind? No, not really. They so yeah, so the genesis of some of those upgrade cards was before the customizables. Sometimes it was during, right? Because the cycles kind of overlapped. But with like the Strike Team one specifically, that one was really designed to make characters like Asajj, Padme, and some of the other operatives just function better, right? To create kind of mini commanders that also provided a boost to special forces that weren't necessarily the top pick special forces, right? So, I think one of the things that really came out of the discussion was if we can get an upgrade card that boosts two different aspects of the game. If you can say, here's an operative slot that doesn't get considered as much because of the deficiencies for operatives versus a commander. And then you can say, okay, well, if you give them a boost, now all of a sudden, maybe this boost works really well with ARF troopers instead of ARC troopers. Maybe it works well with both. Who knows? But at the very least, right, you're opening up those options and that opportunity for players to say, well, if I mix and match this and this, and I connect these two, this operative, this special forces unit works really well together as opposed to this other operative and this other special forces unit, we can start to really build in those player choices. So the customizables were, they were tested with these things, but they weren't necessarily the defining factor. For the most part, the upgrades that players got were all pretty much targeted to address issues with legacy units that we wanted to try to find fixes for or to make them more compelling. Whether that was a specific unit, whether it was for a faction like Imperials with the Imperial March, or it was, you know, a wider, like, just philosophical thing on the operative slot, the special forces slot, speeder bikes, right? That was another one where we were effectively reacting to the situation where the data said speeders aren't super effective. So you can drop their points, but is that enough? And the reality is that I don't think it was. Like, internally, we said, it's nice, but again, it doesn't actually make them do something. And I think that's, at the end of the day, right, the core philosophy that we try to live by, and I'm not saying we hit it every time, but that we try to live by all the time, like our final checkpoint is does the thing do something? And if the answer is it doesn't do anything, then why are you making it, right? Mm-hmm. And in a lot of cases, you know, when you look at where some of the units were, where these upgrades try to take them, and how the upgrades differ from upgrades in the past, is that they're all trying to have a dramatic effect on what the thing does on the tabletop and push them more towards the vision of what whatever it was originally designed to do. And maybe it hasn't quite hit the mark. So we can, you know, we can always adjust points, but again, if the thing's just not compelling, then points don't matter. So I think this is a nice way to patch certain units and provide those options and that opportunity to it. And, yeah, you know, it's another thing too, that's very different and hopefully starting to kind of see, is that I know a lot of people were like, there are no words on these bigger cards without art anyway. So what are they talking about? Well, the reality is like the older cards, yes, but the newer cards, right? And you're now seeing that we can really dive in and make these cards interesting and do several things. Explain new rules without using keywords, all that stuff. Like, that text space becomes really valuable going forward in how we envision these kind of cards and their impact on the game and the units to which they're assigned to.
Yeah, and Megan, I apologize, I'm going to go slightly off order just because it's that this one's relevant to what we're talking about now. But I think Willie just pointed out how these cards sort of reflect part of the reason of why the space was given back to text from art, which is that the plan was for cards to be potentially a little bit more complex, to have some more complex interactions built in. In that way, it actually kind of makes me think a little bit about Shatterpoint and MCP, especially like the team tactics cards in MCP, where like a team tactics card can actually completely define the army that is running it. Like, there's entire factions that are actually sort of embedded within a team tactics card. And so I guess you've basically already answered it, I think, but does this represent sort of like the new generation or the new wave of how AMG thinks about upgrades compared to the past? Because like, you think about the original upgrades that came out, there's like e-gear that you gain unhindered, and there's precision scopes that you gain precise one. You know, it's pretty simple stuff for the most part. As time went on, even in sort of like the mid era of the game, they were getting a little bit more complex. You know, you got to the point where you had cards that you could, you know, expend, or cards that were a little bit more complex, but these do feel a little bit different. So I was curious if that's something that was, or I guess I was curious if you could sort of speak to the intent of that.
I mean, the intent overall, right, is simply to provide things that have compelling options and choice and that do things that players either want or that do things that we as the designers and developers want to see players be able to explore in game, right? And I think one of the biggest changes with how we're approaching the cards versus in the past is that in Legacy Legion, right, every pack came with X number of upgrade cards. Right. And so when you approach it that way, and when you have this kind of quota of upgrade cards that you're going to provide, and they're going to be universal and they're going to do all this stuff, and they're on small, like little halfsies cards, right? Like, there's just not a lot of room to do a lot on those things. Yeah. You kind of find a minimalist approach where you say, okay, we'll just give this unit this keyword with this upgrade. We'll do this with that. And, you know, that can work. It can be a functional thing, but I think when you have that situation, it can become very easy to say, okay, well, these are just the best ones, and everything else is kind of like, well, it doesn't do anything, right? It does a thing, but it doesn't do anything critical to the game or move the experience forward or stuff like that. And again, you know, our kind of approach, and with the change to how we've been putting only the specific like character or unit specific upgrade cards in the box and these kinds of things, and instead utilizing a universal upgrade system that allows every player to have access to that stuff by just getting the card pack or downloading it as a print and play, kind of frees you up to say, well, let's only make upgrade cards when they're cool and they have a big impact. And I think in that way, the Team Tactic Cards philosophy is kind of similar. We try with Team Tactic Cards, because there are only so few of them and you only get to play five of them in a game,
right,
all of them have to have a pretty big approach in terms of how they dramatically change stuff. They're the command cards of, you know, in some ways of MCP. The upgrade cards aren't quite, you know, hopefully they're not quite as game skewing, right? That's not really the goal. Maybe if they're an expend or something. But
you did give us recalibration matrix and a force power for what it's
worth. We did do that to provide some luck changing abilities there.
For those of us not versed in MCP, I'm assuming that's the
that's the reroll. Yeah, you just basically get to reroll your whole roll.
Okay. Yeah, and then you can't touch it again after you do the reroll. Yeah.
So you get to do it once. And clairvoyance is very similar to that effect. But you know, again, like the goal, right, is to say, well, we don't have a quota, so any upgrade card we make, we have to believe as a development team, it has a useful and meaningful impact on whatever. It doesn't have to be the whole game. It can just be the unit that can take it, or it could be multiple units across different factions, that kind of stuff. And then we have the freedom of text spacing, of all of that stuff that goes along with the new upgrade card, to be able to really dive in and define those rules. And the challenge there is saying, okay, you know, unlike a command card that you only take one of and you play once per game, upgrades are going to have potentially a consistent impact on how the unit functions, and you might have six different upgrades on six different units. So cognitive load is something that you have to factor into that, but I don't think we've really hit that point in the game overall. Like, Legion is still pretty nimble in terms of what players are asked to manage and all of that for a, you know, for a big large scale war game. And with all of that in mind, right, yeah, the philosophy has become, if you're going to make something, then have it be dramatic, have it be something that is truly an option and that kind of radically changes or dramatically changes the way the unit functions on the tabletop. Because I think that's what upgrades want to be. I think that's what they were always meant to be. It's just, you know, the way in which they were approached in the past for a lot of different reasons I don't think it always quite pushed them over the limit. And then the times it did, it just kind of showed how so many of the others didn't hit that mark, right? Like, when you achieved the goal, anything that wasn't really close was just like, oh, this is just meaningless paper. And hopefully as we move forward with that, we can continue to provide new and exciting options that force players to make hard choices about what they're going to attach and where.
Yeah, I think, Mike, actually, that's a very relevant question to what you just said.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the things that we noticed with these new upgrades is a lot of them are like a training, but can be equipped to a unit that doesn't have a training slot, or, you know, that's the one that's jumping to my forefront of my mind. Is that something that you guys are expecting to like use a lot of, or I guess, how are you guys feeling about how the like categorization of like certain upgrade slots is working?
And how does one train a speeder bike?
How does, you know?
I mean, they've got a pilot, right?
Assumably the rider gets some kind of training program in order to know how to go forward and backwards, but...
The Imperial ones, I'm not so sure.
You never know.
The other ones, maybe.
I mean, an Ewok was able to drive one with zero understanding of mechanical operations in general, so they're clearly designed well for unskilled users. Again, if you go back to kind of what we've talked about consistently, is that a lot of these upgrades, especially in this drop, were designed to kind of address deficiencies or issues that points alone would likely not fix with units. And once you start looking at, okay, this is a universal upgrade and we want it to address all prepared position units, not all prepared position units have the same slots, right? There's a lot of differences between them. And then your choice is, well, you can make the same upgrade several times, with the appropriate slots for the units that you're trying to hit. But even within certain factions, that doesn't always work because of how the legacy units were designed. And when it comes down to that, right, our option is we're going to choose what's best for the game over the legacy, and being able to kind of do the unassigned slot, you know, based on another different factor, is where we're going to go. The hope is that we don't have to do it a lot.
Sure.
Because I think it becomes like a little too gamey and a little too overwhelming when suddenly, just because your unit has no slots, you can take like all of these upgrade cards as opposed to one training, but here are these pseudo trainings that you all have access to. Now you can take seven trainings, and it's like, that's not really the goal, right? So it's an imperfect system for sure, and one that we have to monitor. But at the end of the day, looking at the goals and what we felt was best for the game, we really came to the point that it was, well, these cards address these things. We need to make sure that all the things that need that card can be affected by it. And that was the solution that we landed on, which has a little bit of history in Legion, but obviously it hasn't been utilized, I think, to this extent.
Yeah, the cards that it's been on have never really been like good, I guess. So it really hasn't come up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
for sure,
I mean, these ones are definitely going to be good. So it's going to come up all the time, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, it's the whole slot thing. It doesn't come out of thin air, right? Because there are some units that do have that slot, and so for them, it does take out something meaningful, to the point where I think the easiest example is that a riot control squad does have to pick between Imperial March and Tenacity, because like both of those could be obviously very helpful to a melee based charging unit. So you know, like giving the training to the speeder bag, it's like, ah, how funny. But you had to do something, right? And so I think it makes sense what you picked. And I agree that this is good for being able to squeeze in something that needed to be squeezed in. But I'm reassured that you all do have it on your mind that there could be a certain point where there are like six different upgrades that says you can equip this even if you don't have X slot. And then, you know, all of a sudden you're going to have you could have players going, well, can I only equip one of these upgrades that, you know, I can do without a slot? Or, and then, you know, you may have a clever, like bad batch player who all of a sudden has like, you know, seven upgrades on it when they were never supposed to have any.
Yeah. 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 And I think that's, you know, it's something we discussed and we talked about, and we will be watching going forward. So at the end of the day, I don't believe that you're going to see a ton more upgrades that say you can take this without a slot. But
going forward, you'll design the unit, hopefully, like with a big part of this is that, you know, so many of these units were ones that you did not design. Like you were a part of the chance to redesign them. But yeah. Like,
I mean, even then, right? Saying like holding yourself accountable to five, you know, some of those units were made 5 years ago, right? The way the game is just played in general is so radically different.
Yeah, exactly.
That you wind up in situations where you say, okay, well, if we could do it different, maybe we would have done this or maybe we would have done that. And I think, you know, again, overall, you have to have like ramps where you as the team that's trying to make the best game holistically that you possibly can say, well, we should have given this a training slot, but then maybe you didn't want to give it a training slot because there's trainings that you don't want on it because they're problematic. You know, this kind of goes back to one of the original ideas that we had when we were looking at the redesign and everything, was just making every upgrade specific to the unit, which gives us a lot of control as developers to say, well, this is the Stormtrooper unit, and you'd have the same upgrade across very different units, but the Stormtroopers could only take Stormtrooper upgrades. You know, the Rebel Troopers could only take Rebel Trooper upgrades. Like, get rid of universal upgrades entirely, sort of, except for the fact that you have universal upgrades because they cross these different units, these different factions. They're just differently named, or they're tagged to the unit. It's like, that wasn't really an efficient way, and we still liked the idea of universal upgrades. So we stuck with it, and I'm glad we did. I think it's overall the beneficial system, but this is kind of one of the consequences of that, is that universal upgrades are only so good based on, can the units that need to take the universal upgrades be able to take them? So,
yeah, makes sense. So I think we're gonna shift a little bit to talking about sort of the game as a whole. You know, I will just like reiterate, Mike and I both said it in the cast that we did, but from us, like, we really do appreciate y'all's willingness to take a risk, you know, between schedule balance updates to give the game a boost that I think, I mean, it seems like everybody agrees that it was something that was necessary. And so we really do appreciate that. And then at the same time, like, the balance updates in terms of adjusting things that we already knew about and were playing with, there were obviously a bouquet of ups and downs aside from the two, you know, faction slash pseudo faction, to respect Mike about Shadow Collective, that were performing the worst,
Thank you. Appreciate it.
which was, you know, Empire and Shadow Collective. They were the ones that were sort of like riding on the bottom. And so they were the ones that only got buffs, and that makes total sense. And yet, through all that, you know, Mike, I'm going to be curious whether you agree with me on this statement, but I think that through these adjustments, the faction that we've actually arrived at in terms of something close to a, you know, a like very a very balanced like set of internal choices is CIS. Because you know, when you look at CIS, they had one unit, two units, one of them hasn't been adjusted yet. It's a little more recent though, that seemed to be doing very well. Droidekas, that was adjusted up, but you know, not by a ton. It still seems like it's in a very good place. And then they have all these other things. And you know, if you were to ask me directly, like, what are the CIS units that I wouldn't, you know, really think too much about trying to put into a competitive army, it would have been Sun Fac and Asajj and Staps. And all of those have been adjusted down. It seems like they're potentially in a place where they're at that place where I feel like it's a real consideration, you know, if you ask me and my opinion of it, to like put any of those units in a squad. And so I think CIS, like, anything that has that faction symbol on it seems pretty legit to me. And I'm curious as to what you think it's going to take and whether you think it's possible to get all of the other factions to that point.
Well, I mean, the cynical side of me, because I've been around the sun so many times with this, is that give it 6 months and CIS's internal balance won't look as rosy.
In fairness to you, this seems like a loaded question.
Just because, you know, players, like, if you're a player who's looking for efficiency, you're gonna find it, right? Those any time a value is different across a range of options, you're going to be able to identify, even if it's, you know, the tiny percent. I think the great part about that statement, though, is that if everything feels viable, then it means that we're really hitting the curve of what we want, which is you can take the things that you like, and then through player skill, you believe that you have an equal or greater chance of beating somebody depending on what they take. And, you know, when it comes down to how do you get the other factions to that, I think there's still a lot of ramp and runway to go. With Empire, you know, one of the things that we're consistently working towards is kind of getting their order control down, because that's what they want to do. You know, I
Callus
think
helping with that,
for sure.
certainly.
And I think and you know and then I think we made big strides in making them kind of the core unit faction, which is what we wanted. So you're going to see a lot more big, hopefully big squads, but just a lot more squads of core across the different like disciplines and things like that. So it's going to feel very militaristic, and then the special forces will be kind of the additive for what you want the flavor of the force to do or things like that. Galactic Republic definitely is one of those factions that I think we're seeing some of what we want, which is the idea of this customization and this elite force that can really adapt to whatever it wants to do. You know, the ARC Trooper supremacy is one of those things where it's not quite there yet, you know, and we've made some adjustments twice now to try to like find the right spot for them to be, where their raw number efficiency is kind of offset by the price that you're paying for the rest of the army. And, you know, it's been exciting to see people start to look at ARFs in new light, thanks to the strike team upgrade with Padme, and some of the other options there. And I think, you know, ideally, as we see the generic Jedis come in, as we see more of these kind of like options, and opportunities, and Ahsoka being another, I think, indicator, hopefully, of where the future can go. Not everyone's going to be running a six-act list like Ollie did at the WTC. However, I think one of the exciting things for us about how that list ran is that the way in which he utilized the character upgrades in his different big squads is kind of the idea behind the Republic, right? Is that the more we're able to inject these characters, the more we have these customizable upgrades, you can really, as a player, you can really dive in and say, okay, I can make this unit do these things, and this is what I want, and I can do that multiple times, or I can like spread it out and do these other things. So I think it's more of a lack of options when it comes to Galactic Republic and continuing to build out that customization so players really feel like they're playing with an elite force that is trained to do anything it wants. And Rebels, I think we're close, right? We'll see how the adjustment to Sleeper goes. But overall, I've been pretty excited to see the discussions around like people list building and looking at the new upgrades and saying, okay, well, maybe I'll take this, maybe I'll take that, those kinds of things. But, you know, the proof always comes out in the play. And I think it's just a constant dial tuning of saying, well, this thing's a little under, this thing's a little over. How do we keep that balance curve going? And see where we go, right? But I would say that Empire and Republic have some room yet to grow. And there are a lot of releases on the horizon that will hopefully push them in the direction that we want to see out of it. Rebels, I think, are pretty close, in my opinion. But we'll see how this latest adjustment goes. And then of course there's November. So who knows what might get adjusted and what might get dropped. And then of course there's always an opportunity for a stealth update in the future. You never know, right?
Yeah. It'd be convenient if Rebels and Republic actually both shared a couple units, in the special forces slot that, could maybe get some more attention also. That's fine. No, but that makes sense. And for us, I agree with you for whatever that is worth, that, you know, Rebels do feel like they're on the precipice and that, Empire and Republic, you know, need a bit of adjustment. But, you know, all that being said, there have been stepwise iterative improvements in terms of the internal balance for all the factions, as far as I'm concerned. You know, CIS is where it is. And, you know, Mike, I know that you were saying I was asking a loaded question.
It was totally a loaded question.
Listen, I get to decide this is my podcast. I get to decide what's loaded or not. But like me asking that is not, you know, saying that like, oh, CIS is the best faction, you guys messed up. Like I was, in fact, trying to say that CIS is in a place where all of the choices feel legitimate, which is, as you said, like the place where you want to be. Mm-hmm. Now, it might still be possible that a certain like very tall droid that emerges out of the water like may like be too good a choice, but it is not so much too good a choice that people aren't going to be considering the other heavies in the faction, and therefore that doesn't like mess up the internal balance in like a huge way. So.
I got destroyed by a persuader on
yeah, Wednesday. Yeah. They're good. They're very good. Mike, I don't know if you wanted to take the next one about what's become somewhat of a meme in this podcast discussion with AMG.
I guess the question is centered around Doug in and making sure that like, you know, it's obviously like helping prepare positions. What's going to happen here with Cumbersome? Well, what's going on?
Like, what is like,
are we gonna get like the uncumbersome as like an upgrade?
Right, because here's the question that, you know, we've already given a little bit of a bonus to a couple of the cumbersome units, you know, the E-Web and the mortar in particular. It'll be interesting to see if I see my first mortar so far in Legion 2.6 now that we have dug in. How can we adjust cumbersome without making those units like too good now? That's sort of the interesting part of the question for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously we've talked about cumbersome and how it's not a very feels goody rule, and it is probably more restrictive than it needs to be. You know, is that an upgrade? Like, do you lift, bro, and it just removes cumbersome because you're weight training to carry this missile launcher? I don't know. I think overall, right, as a universal rule, the answer isn't rewriting the rule. in a way that is fair and balanced across everything, right? So when it comes to stuff like that, rather than give players a way to sporadically get around it or intentionally get around it, it's better to probably just rewrite the rule to be something that's exciting and does what it does, but does so in a way that players actually want to, you know, participate with it. So my assumption is that whenever the dev staff gets around to it, we will probably just see that core rule be rewritten, similarly to a rule like Secret Mission, which gets ragged on all the time. Like, we're aware Secret Mission, not particularly that great. You know, but again, as a universal rule, it's very easy to go into the core rule book and just be like, here's this block of text. It now says this. When do we get to those points? You know, I think that's the bigger question of timing and how everything kind of like lays out and works and those kinds of things. But yeah, so the solution, I think, is not, it's not to create an upgrade. It's just to rewrite Cumbersome to do what you want it to do across the game, because it's a rule that appears a lot for good reason. You know, it's clearly something that we feel like should be in the game. It's just, its negative is outside of its impact.
Yeah. I am curious how, I guess the discussion centered around like Cumbersome, obviously a keyword, it's on a bunch of different units, making a global effect to it changes a lot. Like, and then on the other hand, you guys like have prepared positions, also like a keyword on a bunch of units, and you guys kind of attack that with Dug In, right? In addition to some points of like adjustments, what is kind of your difference in mindset about, like, is it because one's like a unit keyword and one is like a weapon keyword? Or
I think it kind of comes down to a little bit of, so our analysis on prepared positions, right? It's twofold. Obviously, it was slightly overvalued just in general. So points adjustments happened. But on top of that, there's the argument that says, okay, well, as a player, I still don't think the points adjustments are enough. I want to be able to get more out of this unit, or I want to see X, Y, or Z happen with it, right? I personally, as a player, don't believe that prepared position units are worth it because they're just too exposed at the start of the game. Sure. In that case, right, we can tackle it from two directions. We can say prepared positions at its base is slightly cheaper because we realize, you know, we've realized through watching play patterns and doing data analysis and all this, it was slightly overcosted. And then we can say, but if you want to spend those points we just gave you back to basically get your unit to be more effective, we can do that through an upgrade. And so I think when you look at something like Cumbersome, right, which is inherent to an upgrade you're already paying for, sure, for the most part, you know, I can't think of any unit that at its base has Cumbersome. I think it's only weapons that have Cumbersome.
Might be the E-Web, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah, maybe.
The E-Web, the Mortar, and the Mark II are all Cumbersome.
So, yeah. So in that case, right, instead of saying, well, you're gonna pay for this, and then we're going to change, and then you can get this, I think the reality is that lowering the points on Cumbersome weapons again, or across the board, right, if some of them have seen adjustments, some of them haven't, it's not really going to do anything. What we know is the core problem is the rule.
Sure.
Something like prepared positions, you know, there's debate among the internal development studio that says prepared positions is still really strong even without Dug In. Now Dug In obviously makes it better, but you know, this gives you the option. You can take the discount, take the prepared positions unit, do something with it. Alternatively, you can take prepared positions, take the upgrade to make up for the points that you kind of got back, and have a stronger prepared positions unit that is very defensive while it's in your territory. So I think that's kind of like what we try to avoid. Overall, again, this goes back to player choice, is creating something that just becomes stapled on.
Sure.
Now, the argument could be made that Dug In is stapled onto every prepared positions unit. I don't know, but I think there's a debate there.
I think there's a choice now, which is probably where you want to be.
And even if that choice is like 70-30, it's still a choice.
Right, yep, right.
If you looked at Cumbersome and you just said, well, there's a card that you can take at an additional cost to make Cumbersome not terrible, it would be like, well, anytime I'm going to take a Cumbersome weapon, I'm just going to take that, because we know that the ruling on Cumbersome currently is such a big negative that people won't even consider a lot of those things.
Sure.
I mean, that's some of the thought process. Sometimes it's just what's most effective in terms of stuff. And I like, if you did a cumbersome upgrade, now you're going to say, okay, well, does everything that can take a cumbersome weapon have a training slot? Are they the same? Like, how are we solving this problem?
Yeah.
And we just discussed how we want to be pretty careful about giving people free upgrades, just based on like trying to fix problems. So sometimes it just, you know, it's how do you deploy it? What's the cleanest way to do so? Changing the universal rule to cumbersome because it appears in so many different weird cases is probably the best way to just go about it.
You're just making me think of like the potential devious business tactics of like, we're going to give you this cool weapon, but it's got cumbersome, but for only 9 points, yeah, we can give you this upgrade that allows you to have fun with it.
You
like
gotta,
going to the mall, you know?
Exactly.
You gotta download the DLC. You know? Right. You get the base weapon for free, but
yeah, exactly.
If you want it to be good, you got to get this pack over here. We try our best to avoid doing that, right? Like,
we appreciate
at least if
it.
We can.
It's the $15 cosmetic upgrade pack.
Yeah, exactly. But it gives you the non-cumbersome. It removes cumbersome. Right. So
well, you know, Will, I know that you have a heart out, and we appreciate you answering our questions. But you know, we have a little bit more time. I guess I was just gonna open it up to you to just, you know, allow you to speak in generalities. Like, we're not asking for anything specific, but just about like, what's the thing that you're most excited about, you know, for the rest of the year?
Ooh, the rest of the year. That's a great question. I'm very interested to see how the gameplay and, you know, the ripple effects of the last week's update go.
Mm-hmm.
It was obviously very exciting to just watch the overall hype of the community, to, you know, see how the Discords and all of the different online chatter really changed in terms of like what people were evaluating, how they felt about these things. You know, we've got all these cool new avenues to explore. It was, and I think, you know, part of that was seeing players respond to things that we, as the development team, had thought we had identified as things that were like pain points within the game, right? The operative slot, these things, those kinds of obviously fixing Riot Troopers finally, maybe. We'll see how it plays out, but they're definitely better now.
Certainly better.
You know, prepared positions, speeder bikes, all these different things. And so it was really rewarding to see players say, oh yes, this is the solution. It makes you feel good when you identify, you know, the right moves, and that those moves are immediately kind of acknowledged by the folks playing the game. Because sometimes you can find a solution to a problem, present it, and people are like, well, that's not what we didn't like. We wanted you to fix it this way. And you say, oh, I don't know, we missed that one. But try it this way. It happens all the time because, you know, part of development is subjective. Like, there's a lot of different ways to approach balance. So I'm excited to see the ripple effects. I'm very excited to take this energy into, you know, the release of the new starter boxes that are going to be coming out. I think it's only good for everyone that people are really jazzed about the game, and that it feels like it's in a very healthy spot. And that as those players approach those different faction starters based on what they love in Star Wars, they're going to have a community of people ideally around them saying, you know, what you were talking about, Evan, which is, there's really no bad options in any of these, right?
Right.
Some factions are maybe slightly feels better in terms of their overall balance than others, but realistically, you know, you can't, there's no one on the outs. If you love Rebels, no one's going to be like, don't play that faction. They're terrible. They never win games. If you like Empire, it's going to be the same, right? I think that to me is very exciting as well, because that's the environment in which we're going to see the biggest amount of player growth. We're going to see a bunch of new people come to the game. We're going to see events grow and, you know, more community coming around this, you know, this really fun and exciting future that we have planned for everything with Legion. And that just means that we get to, you know, we get to do all of our crazy ideas for the future that are hopefully going to wow and shock and impress people. And all that stuff that we show off at like Mini Strav, or we show off at Adepticon, or, you know, we just randomly post at times. So I think, you know, overall, again, it's been exciting this year just to finally get to that point, but being where we are now, being able to do that stealth update, seeing the excitement around it, and knowing we're going to carry that forward into a big moment for the game's future. Like, all of that's, you know, it's thrilling to me because that's what we're trying to do every day we come to work, is to just generate those moments of player enjoyment and absolute, like, hype.
Cool. And I do just want to add on, Will, you can tell us the truth here. You know, when you were when you were hearing Mike and I, you know, sort of rag on, but like we did all these casts covering like the state of the faction for
you did,
you know, all five of them. And, you know, I'm thinking in particular of the Rebel one we did, where we were both like, 145 point of soak, I really wouldn't worry about it. You know, were you sitting there like, I'll show them. I'll make their podcast obsolete in 2 weeks.
I will say that I was kind of giggling to myself about all, because it wasn't just you guys. I mean, there were a lot of different community casts coming out with like the in-depth whatever guide on this thing.
Right.
And I was like, well, you know, I mean, the good news is that we'll keep you fresh. We'll keep you fresh with content. Like, you'll just be flush with content.
We're not complaining, believe me.
We're just going to like shake it up. But yeah, it was, you know, it was some of those moments where you kind of listen to stuff and, again, listening to all of the commentary and discussion, you know, whenever something got hit on in terms of, well, this is just not usable because it needs to be X, Y, or Z, if you know that the change that has been made or used pushes it in that direction, then it's kind of confirmation for the fact that maybe, you know, you're not terrible at your job. You can at least, you know, do some of it sometimes well. And then there were times where I think the best part is when it's, you know, you do something really aggressive, like a lot of the points cuts, especially on Ahsoka and Asajj, where folks are like, well, you know, if it was like 15 points, they'd be better. And you're like, well, we're just going to double that. And you're going to get to live in a world where like these are really exciting choices. And that was intentional. You know, that was a fun conversation that we had, because the original points adjustments that we tested with those characters were like 10 to 15 points. You know, they weren't crazy. They were pretty modest. And during that meeting, you know, the subject just came up. It was like, we kept talking over and over about how we really wanted to see operatives be a more compelling choice and all of this.
Uh-huh.
And I was just like, why don't we just take the Pagani approach? Just cut them by 40 points and see what happens.
See what happens. Yeah, great.
And they, everyone kind of stopped, and they, and Dursum got all like flustered. And then, but the more we talked about it, I was like, what's the worst that can happen? People take them all the time. That's literally what you just said you wanted to see. Right, you're still taking a slot, you're still having to deal with the command stuff, there's a lot of challenges just baked into taking an operative or even another commander. So it's like, just try it, just be aggressive. And so we did, and the playtesters had the exact same response. They're like, this seems like too much, and we're like, just try it. So, you know, like, I think being able to take big swings like that and kind of break the mold is also, you know, it's fun when we get to surprise people with that.
And when you're making adjustments twice or sometimes even more times per year, you know, if you do overswing, then you can deal with it. So it's really not that huge a deal.
You can. I mean, with like, especially with characters or limited things, when you can only take one Asajj, right? It's
right.
You can be a bit more, you know, I think you can be a lot more aggressive because it's, you can only take one. If you did that to, you know, obviously if you do that to a unit like Arcs or Sleeper Cell, and you can take multiples, now they're going to have that discount has an outsized impact on the overall game balance, because multiples in a big army game are the way forward, right? And so I think there's that tendency of, you know, overall characters, because you only get one of them ever, can be more effectively points costed at a more aggressive price. Because again, like, you can't take three Asajjs. It's just not a thing you could do. If you could, it probably would be too much.
I am curious, just based on that mentality, are you guys at all concerned that you swung too hard on riot control?
I don't think so. I mean, they got a lot of.
And I don't Mike think they are really either, actually but aren't.
I am like, it is like 22 points a unit.
It's
right?
a lot.
Yeah.
I think overall that is more reflective of the fact that our initial analysis on where they would land, because again, so much of that testing for like Sleeper Cell, for Riots, was done either Legacy Legion or it was done specifically with just our internal playtesting meta, right? And while our groups are amazing and they play lots of games and we do as much game like play internally as possible, as we talk about a lot, the way in which the community adopts and adapts to game rules and new situations can be very surprising. And, you know, Pagani isn't blowing smoke when he says he thinks old Riot Control are super good. Like, he does. They play to the way in which we saw success with them. That's not how the global community sees success with units in Legion. So I think, like, that just kind of shows the difference, how dramatic the difference can be.
All right, welcome back. We do apologize. Luckily, we had finished the interview. We honestly had gotten to the point where we were starting to get into the zone of wasting Wilshick's time even more than is like what the baseline is when he's on with us. So we ran into some technical stuff, but we just emailed him to say, like, hey, please, like, we had other stuff to do. We will manage. Either way, it was yet another awesome interview. We really appreciate that AMG is taking the time to chat with us. They certainly don't have to. I feel like we've been pretty nice to them, but like they didn't know that, but with, at least the first time they signed on to it. And who knows, maybe Mike, this time they were going to show up and I could have said, how dare you let us record literally 5 podcasts to cover the state of the faction. And then 2 weeks after that to change everything. So what about my needs?
I mean, you sort of did ask that, right?
In a joking way. he knew it was all friendly. But I guess, like, Mike, what was the thing, if you had to pick one thing that you took away from that?
I'm not sure you said anything like completely unexpected. I personally really enjoyed hearing the like conversation that was centered around like how they view hitting something like prepared positions as opposed to cumbersome. I certainly found that very interesting. It makes sense, I think, but like it's one of those things that if you're just like attacking it on the surface level, it's like why don't you just do the same thing, right? So I think it was good to hear that. We didn't get a chance to get it in there, but you know, he was like, man, we were like really aggressive with the Asajj and Ahsoka points cuts. And I was just like, and you just couldn't have been more aggressive with the Yoda points cut. He was there. I just didn't get a good job. I didn't get a good time to get it in there.
Well, you know, I honestly was tiptoeing the line when I mentioned, without saying the name, you know, was talking about Wookiees, and he was like, hey, you know, if Rebel and Republic are almost there, you could get them both there together much more quickly if you adjusted Wookiees, which is a special forces slab that both of them have 2 of. But, you know, listen, for everybody listening out there, Mike and I hope you can tell that we really are appreciative of all this, and that when we talk about stuff like making Yoda cheaper, doing something to help out Wookiees, it's not like we're not like making stuff up, but we are not so petulant to the point that like we're gonna be like, oh, what about this toy that I like playing with?
It's like one of those things where you can like poke fun at it and not be mad about it at the same time. Right? Like, you know,
does
Yoda need some help? Yeah. Am I pissed about it? No. Right? Like, you know.
I mean, and for what it's worth, I have played one game. You know, we're gonna talk about like some early experiences we have with these new rules. I've played one game with the new Yoda and with the Strike and Fade Fluttercraft, specifically in Wookiee Battle Force. I think that Yoda does feel he feels okay to me now, and that, just like I just said, it's the Wookiees that don't feel okay. And when I had success with that list before, it was because, or a big part of it was that Yoda was allowing two bowcaster Wookiee units with battle meditation to, both of them to double move relentless in, and then for Yoda to also be moving one in for a charge or another relentless shooting attack. And that was that before the November update, I was having a lot of fun with that list. And then Recon Intel went up and Yoda's tricks went away, and then I like threw that list away. So I was trying to revive it, but it's still it, like without recon intel on those Wookiees because it's just too expensive.
The Wookiee battle force just has been hit on all cylinders between recon intel, offensive push, and tenacity. Yeah,
briefly, and like... defensive battle shield to fix that. But you know, I will say that the strike and fade flutter, it does feel maybe a little bit extraneous, but what it does is that it allows you to do the turn one dive move that I like doing and get extra safe afterwards, or you can do a double dive if you're going to their weak side, I should say, and if there is something that they thought was hidden, now you can like double dive and still get away, which is pretty cool, and it's definitely worth 5 points. But I'm curious, have you had any sorts of experiences with the new rules, Mike?
I did. I played a bunch of the new upgrades and a bunch of the points adjusted units this week in an Empire list.
Okay,
I got my butt handed to me.
Interesting.
Now I want to preface this with. I put like a like bunch of like random, I want to say random, but I was definitely not like.
You're experimenting.
I wasn't stress testing anything.
Right.
I had like one E-Web with Doug in, right? Like I didn't have six prepared positions units all with it. I had two stormtroopers with.
Just the Super Squad?
The Super Squad, yeah. I had Kallus with Strike Team Leader. I took some Death Troopers, right? Vader had a trusted agent or whatever, right? So like and I was running Kallus and Din, so I had like a smattering of some things in there to like kind of see how it went. Strike Team Leader I think is definitely going to be really good. That was one takeaway, with the exception that like my Death Troopers went 0-3 on their first three saves, and that just kind of made that not work anymore.
Blame the dice already, Mike.
I know. Maybe I should have taken a dodge with Strike Team Leader. I think that card definitely stood out to me as powerful. I just got a little unlucky with how that went with the Death Troopers.
It happens.
I don't know how I feel about Duggan. So Duggan, I think I've landed on you kind of have to have order control on the unit for Duggan to be like a thing that you want to be taking. I definitely was like, oh, I've got Doug in on my E-Web. That's great. And then like I pulled my one support unit out of the bag and I was like, wish I had improv, you know? And I don't know, you know, I didn't roll a red cover save once. So maybe a little biased on how that went. The E-Web lived for a bit, but I'm not sure that that's because of Doug in. Right. So I don't know. I think that you kind of have to have order control. And you know, I think Will in our interview with him just now was also like kind of talking about like Empire needs a little bit more help on the order control front. So maybe there's more in the tank on that. But
it does make me wonder if customizables are gonna, you know, like if one of those abilities, I already forget what they were called, but the doctrines, one of those doctrines, you know, has something that changes the nature of order control, or
sure,
who knows,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So I definitely think that, you know, you got to have a plan for it. It kind of like convinced me that you definitely can't just throw a Doug in your list and feel good about it. You got to have a plan for how that's going to work.
Can you throw Doug in and an overcharge generator and an HQ uplink on either an E-Web or an FD and then feel good about it, do you think?
I don't know. That's like all of a sudden you're talking about like 20 points of upgrades on a unit that is one of its primary reasons to be in your list at all is to be like
cheap.
Points efficient.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so, you know, I don't know.
I think it's an interesting thing to try out, because like you are getting some list synergy by taking an order out of the pool, which is always helpful in that situation, and you're gaining defensiveness for that unit. And so just to put it out there, that combination on the E-Web is 79 and on the FD it's 84.
I think what I would rather do is take Kallus, a short trooper unit, and an E-Web.
Ah, right, because they have the short trooper has coordinated placement. It's not just coordinate
mortar
anymore. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. I like that.
I don't think you get it turn one because Kallus isn't on the board at that point.
No, they're all within range of each other like before the game starts. I'm sorry, you're right, because prepare positions. You're right.
So you wouldn't get a turn one. You might need to like have like an order that gives it to him on turn one or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just a thought. Duggan was all right. Points decrease on Death Troopers. I'm going to be honest. I had extra supplies on the Death Troopers again because they went over three on the first save. I didn't get to use it. could have been okay, I guess. Hard to say. I don't really have much to say there. I did have two Stormtrooper squads with Stormtrooper squads. I think we got to talk about this. Will said it again today in our interview where like he was like, big squads are like a thing coming to Empire. It's like a thing that they're driving for. Courage One has got to go. It's just got to go. Even with Indomitable, these units are like just not it. You cannot. So let me rephrase what I'm trying to say. Can you come up with a unit that costs 80 points in this game that you would be willing to pay for that has Courage One?
It would have to be. But there's two caveats to that. One is that like you think about a snowtrooper unit, for example. Sure. Like they're the unit that is maybe the least affected by being suppressed out of any of the Empire's core, right? Because they don't get to move as far, but they still get to move and shoot. The other thing that's a variable there is that Empire at least does have access to compel.
I had compel.
Okay.
I had compel, but here's the issue.
Yeah.
I needed to like the move needed to not be first. Like I needed to like aim or dodge or do something else. Like it was a situation where like I needed to like shoot and move behind this building or having your like 82 point stormtrooper unit that's taking up 10% of your list is like not be able to do the thing. 66% of, like the thing about it is that your opponent basically just has to point a gun at that big squad. And even if they don't kill anything, they've got a decent chance for you to not do anything if it's one suppression. Once you hit two, it's like all bets are off, right? Like as soon as that unit gets two suppression, like Indomitable or not, like they're probably going to have one suppression token when the rally step is over, right? And that's just super easy to do. I don't know.
This was like one of my big concerns with super squads from the beginning. And to be fair, it was a reason why I think a lot of us were higher on the B2 super squad than any of the others. Cause not only was it, it's a droid, but it's Courage 2, which means, that like it's never going to be suppressed and it's really hard to panic it. Even when it's on its own, but like, compared to the Stormtrooper like you're talking about, and then I feel like it gets doubly important when you're talking about something like a veteran or
a rebel
trooper,
right? Yeah,
because they don't have access to compel. They have inspire, but that is dependent on the order timing of the
and your opponent
unit.
Gets to go in between when you inspire,
like,
and when
Leia
the unit
can inspire
goes,
three
right?
off of it, and then a Deka can shoot that super unit again, and then
you might as well have not inspired.
And so
I, I'm like kind of like going through my head on like all these things and like how does this plan like end up playing out? Like, is it a coincidence that we've only seen CIS, who doesn't care about suppression tokens, and Gar, who's Courage 2, be the only two factions that are actually using super squads in any form of like competitive environment? I'm starting.
We've seen geos, but geos also get built in action economy with a free jump.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're separatists, right?
Like, right.
They've also got like, in addition to the free jump, they have like compel on Poggle.
Right? Oh yeah, that's so, actually like, you're right. They have double mitigating factors.
Yeah. Right. So I don't know. You know, I mean, is it indomitable? Is a great keyword,
mm-hmm.
but. It's a lot. Like if you do the math on a unit that is suppressed, like if you have 2 suppression tokens and you are a courage 1 unit with indomitable and 2 suppression units tokens and you are a courage 2 unit with indomitable, like the difference is night and day. Like you almost always are okay if you are a courage 2 unit, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like Wookiees, they get suppressed sometimes, but very rarely.
It's rare, right?
Yeah.
And like, you know, I don't know. If you're, these stormtrooper units are like the cheapest super squad kind of you can put on the table for the mm-hmm. most part. And like, you know, you're talking about short trooper units, you're talking about upwards of, I mean, I still think they're like, what, 110 or something before you like add heavy weapons and stuff on them. Never, ever. And short trooper units, they need to aim, right? Like compel does not help them do the thing, right? I don't know. That's a very long-winded way of saying that I think super squads still need help. I think
some of them.
The rebel and the imperial ones, I think specifically need to be looked at in regards to if you're gonna ask the player to spend somewhere between 90 to like 110 points on a souped up unit.
Yeah,
like it can't be Courage One. It just can't be.
Yeah, I mean, then you're getting to the point of changing the text of upgrade cards, which, you know, obviously they're capable of doing it, but if past is prologue, they're very resistant to doing that.
I'm sorry. I'm going to stop you right there because not only did they release 12 new upgrades last week, they changed all of those upgrades within 24 hours of releasing them in the upgrade document.
Well, that's the advantage of not having like printed cards for those yet.
I bet you all of those cards are already printed wherever they are.
I don't know. That's possible.
I might be like, I don't know. I think that's a cop out. I think that like if something needs to be changed, they'll change it, right? They've shown us that with this update, right?
Right?
You know,
yeah.
And I don't like, know. Is the courage thing like a hard line in the sand? I don't know, but man, I just like I'm not touching those stormtroopers again.
For whatever it's worth, like we have heard from a couple of folks about super fleets, you know, being viable in the right sort of situation. You know, they also have the advantage of having a built-in move and attack, which is very important when we're talking about what we're talking about. Which, you know, stormtroopers could have if you give them Imperial March, but then you're starting to get like really really pricey for 9 white dice, and it's start to maybe not feel like it's worth it.
I also would like to just like toss out there that the context of Brian Baer's super fleet list is also got Lando in it, which means they're getting additional.
They're getting some guidance help and
through guidance or the one step ahead or whatever.
Right. Right. Yeah. That is important context. You're right. So yeah, I don't know. I think that, they clearly want supers to be a common thing that you see. And when one could say that they've gotten
it's closer
halfway there.
It's closer. It's definitely a situation where I was like, I'm going to lose this game because I took 2 super squads. If I had just taken 4 stormtrooper squads instead of 2 supers, I think I would have won.
Right. Right.
Because it was also like I would have had bodies on points sort of situation.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Anyways, beating that over the head. I also took 2 snowtroopers with flamethrowers with Imperial March.
Yeah, how did that feel?
That felt great.
Yeah.
I wish I just had 6 of them. That felt really good. I think on turn two, I was like contesting my opponent's bunker assault point with snowtroopers that like didn't get any extra juice.
And sorry, were those regular snowtrooper units with Imperial March or super squads
They
with
were
some of
regular
the
ones. No,
okay.
yeah.
So I mean, I'm wondering what you would have thought of them being in the super format, because then like the
Compel would have been probably fine there,
yeah, exactly.
as like a thing. Yeah, I don't know. I would have to look at them. I don't think Snowtrooper Supers came down in price, right?
They
I
didn't,
don't
but
even know how much they cost.
it would be a question of whether the added value of the extra 2 inches of movement, like pretty much every turn, if you have compel, as long as you're not panking yourself,
Sure.
it would be enough to make it so that like the reliability of getting that big dice pool in, is more there to the point that it's worth taking that kind of an investment on that unit.
Yeah, I'm actually gonna look up how much that is, because one of the nice things about the Snowtrooper unit with the flamethrower with Imperial March is like all of that was under just 68 points, even with Imperial March, right?
That's fair. That's fair. And so
It's
then if you're
just
doubling up on it,
so cheap.
I mean, and if you are talking about having six of those, then like you don't want to be supering them up at that point, because you do have to put other stuff on the list.
Yeah, Snowtrooper Squad is 46. Yeah, I think at that point you're like a yeah. It's kind of an expensive squad at that point. It's 108 before Imperial March, 114 with it.
I could see having one or two supers as tempo pieces, but then to leave the other ones alone if you wanted to really like dive into it.
I just like
Just because like that's a big dice pool. Like if you're shooting another super, then you're talking about like nine dice plus what is it, one black spray for the flamethrower.
Yeah.
So you could be talking about like a 19, like 18, 19 dice attack. If you're fighting another super with surge to hit, and granted, it's a lot of white dice, but it's also half black dice.
Yeah, I mean the flamethrower gets a lot better if
Right, right.
supers are everywhere, right?
Yeah.
I just like I go back to this and I'm like, you're asking me to pay 110 points before upgrades. And this is a Courage One unit. Like
Compel. I mean, with
sure,
snowtroopers anyway, compel is the
but
answer.
let's be real here. Like if you're playing Empire, you shouldn't be forced to put compel on your list. Like with the availability of compel, which I think is like, while it is more frequent in Empire, it's only on three units, I think, right? It's on DTF, Krennic, and
Vader.
Vader, right?
Yes, I
Like that
think.
means that you have to have one of those three in every Empire list. And don't get me
Well, but
wrong, Vader's good, so like fine. But
I guess I'm not saying it would be in every Empire list. I guess I would be saying if you want to run like super snows with a flamer, then you would want to toss one of those compels in there. But you don't have to be building your list around that.
well, I
And
guess
so.
what I'm attempting to say is like if the thesis is Imperial faction identity is defined by having super squads in your list, you shouldn't be required to take a compel character, I think is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I guess I will also say like between customizables and the high command pack, there's probably a lot more compel coming.
That's very fair,
Yeah.
and there are other like way Ruthless is sort of kind
Yeah,
of could
Ruthless is ouch compel, but
it's compel plus if
right. Yeah, I mean
you're
you do
not
get it. You
suppressed.
do get an actual free action out of that one at the very least.
I do think Empire is gonna be like, I don't know, riot controls at 62, snowtroopers at 68 with Imperial March. I think storms and shores are still gonna be not great.
Well, we'll see with the we'll see whether the whole super shore thing like becomes a thing.
Maybe.
I still think that as a one of, it's almost like a heavy that you're putting in there. that again, you do still run into the order control issue, at least on round one. After round one, I think that that you're actually wanting to shoot first with them. So like the dug in is mostly for the early rounds.
I think the issue that people are going to find with dug in is that you really got to be playing the right primaries for dug in to be good.
True.
I definitely think, like, even on Bunker Assault, I was like, I'd really like to move this EWEB out of my zone. You know? And I think you're going to want to play Breakthrough. I think you're going to want to play, what is it, Intercept Signals?
Yes. Research isn't bad, honestly.
Can you contest from inside your zone? If the answer to... This is how I feel about it. If the answer to that is no, I don't think you really want to skew for it.
That's fair.
With at least, like, it doesn't have to be all of the objectives, but it just has to be, like, if you're going to take, like, one or two units with Doug in, like, you want to be able them to be the dudes that are holding your... Because, like, if you can... like hold your back objective with a dug in unit, like that's insanely difficult.
You can contest research from inside the zone, okay. Because the zone goes 1.5 up and then the research points are 2 up. Okay. And then like the point extends like a little bit on one side and the other. So yeah, like you can have an EWEB that's just sitting back there and contesting. Well,
one thing I did find is that terrain really messed with like my ability to like keep them in the dug-in zone.
Uh-huh.
And have them where I wanted. You know, it was like terrain for the most part has not like defined a lot of my games in the new edition, but it really mattered when I was like, oh man, I have to like keep this unit in a box and right. this building is in the way.
Yeah. I could see some situations where, and especially like with a super squad, if you're trying to do that, like you may just like run out of physical space in certain scenarios. And that is one of the most unfortunate ways to play yourself in this game, is just to like body block yourself out of like achieving the thing that you want to do.
Yeah.
So definitely something to be careful of. Well, Mike, any last thoughts about the interview or these upgrades, before we, sign off and let people ponder the stuff that we've learned from Will Schick?
I'm excited, man. I think if anything, I think the interview definitely emphasizes that there is more to come.
Yeah.
I think on this wavelength, you know, if this is the first 12 upgrades in next year's upgrade card pack, I'd love to know what the next 30 are,
or right,
however many are in it, you know?
It's such a spoiled thing to want, right? But like, you know, it does make me want to know like what's going on in the rest of it.
Cause I mean, you got to assume that like within some degree of like certainty, like there's probably ones that are just as interesting as these are in there. They're just like not targeted at units that they felt like need fixes at the moment. Right. At least I would assume. Like
obviously, Wookiees were totally fine.
you're gonna get your like command upgrade that's Wookiee special forces only, even if you don't have this upgrade slot.
Probably. I mean, we need upgrades to the commands themselves, which are their own problem. I'm gonna put my pin in my prediction right here. I think that the rest of these. Based on this interview, like my prediction, I have no inside info, I should say that, is that the rest of these are actually going to be released alongside the November update. And then the January release is just purely so that people can have cards in hand if they want them. Or the Q1 release, I should say. We don't know exactly when it's going to be. But I bet the rest of these upgrades are going to come with a points update.
My marketing guy brain, is like, nah, man, they're gonna, I don't know. I could sort of see that, but
if according to them, it's never about like, you know, selling the cards for people who want them, and that is never a requirement.
I think it's one thing for the game developer to be like, It's not about the cards. I think it's another thing for like Asmodee to be like, it's not about the cards. You know,
No, like I get it, and I appreciate that realistic viewpoint. But like to date, it truly has not been about the cards,
because you can
legally play this game from the printer if you want to.
Yes.
When it comes to that. So we'll hopefully we'll keep to that. But I also wanted to, I didn't give the shout outs earlier because we were needing to get done with that interview fairly quickly, but Jared Landreth and AG, thank you for being patrons. And with that, Mike, how do we close this out?
Yeah, this has been the Notorious Scoundrels, season 4, episode 21. I'm Mike.
I'm Evan.
Fresh cheese bags.